If you are the parent of a toddler or preschooler, chances are you know a thing or two about tantrums. While those epic meltdowns can certainly be part of normal toddler behavior, they're still maddening, they're stressful, they're exhausting, and you know what? They're exhausting, stressful, and maddening for everyone involved. What can you do to keep your cool and to help your child calm down? Rebecca Schrag-Hirschberg is here. She is a child psychologist, a mother of two, and has a unique understanding of both the science behind tantrums and what works in the heat of the moment to nip blow-ups in the bud. The new book is The Tantrum Survival Guide. Tune in to your toddler's mind and your own to calm the craziness and make family fun again. It's a great pleasure to welcome Rebecca to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. That's a heck of a title. You got a long subtitle. That's good. There's a lot
Thanks.
There. So what got you thinking about tantrums in particular?
Well, I have a private practice. And before that, I was working in a pediatric practice in the Bronx. And the number one question that parents have when they come see me about their 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old is, what do I do when my child completely melts down? And every parent says, my kid is, I know it's normal, but my kid is really off the charts. You haven't seen anyone tantrum the way my kid tantrums. And everyone says that. And I think it's because when you are in it, especially as a parent, it really feels that way. It really feels like this couldn't possibly be normal. This is really, really hard. And so I had been working in this area professionally for a while and giving all kinds of recommendations and guidance, at which point I then had my own kids. And I realized that although the guidance and the advice was scientifically valid and certainly very helpful, it didn't always work. And that there was a lot about being in the trenches with kids that was much more about one's intuition and one's own stuff that comes to the forefront, and that a book needed to be written, to my mind, that somehow would bridge those two experiences, the science about tantrums on the one hand and the, oh my gosh, I'm in Target and my child is hitting his head with a spoon on the other hand.
So does it behoove us? And I don't think you can say that word enough on radio, behoove. Does it behoove us to start with some general definition of what a tantrum is, or do you know it when you see it?
That's a very good question. I do think it behooves us. See, now I can do that too.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
I do think that a definition is important, I think, because there are so many misconceptions. And frankly, the definition is more simple than a lot of people think, I believe. The way that I define it and that I find with my clients it's most helpful to define it is a behavioral expression or a behavioral manifestation of an overwhelming emotional experience. And so it doesn't have to be. It's often associated with testing limits or defiance or, you know, wanting just one more cookie. It can also be a child that feels anxious or alone or shy. That can look like a tantrum. And so although you do absolutely know it when you see it, it's important to know that the definition is merely an overwhelming emotional experience that's coming out in a behavioral form, and that we don't actually, until we dive into some more details, know that it's anything more than something that general.
And that emotional trauma is what the child is feeling. We don't necessarily have to feel it and say, oh, okay, I get it of what they're going through.
Right. And I think, you know, I don't know that I would call it an emotional trauma. It's certainly a difficult emotion and an overwhelming emotion, an emotion that's probably overwhelming because your child is pretty new to this thing called feelings and this planet and how things work. And so something like, you know, not getting a cookie may feel overwhelming to them, but I think we have to be careful when we use the word trauma.
Okay.
But
fair enough.
To the extent that your point is that we don't have to be sucked into that, I think that's that's an incredibly important point, because what it means is that, yeah, it's actually our job as a parent to stay calm, to stay regulated, to have an adult perspective of what's going on. And that can be really hard.
Now, one of the things that you write about in the book is that parents and the people who are with the children at the time, what you write about, what we may be doing, perhaps unintentionally, that encourage these outbursts. So, in other words, that's another way of saying that we can have some control over that, correct?
Absolutely.
How so?
Absolutely. Although I want to be clear, because I'm not saying, even if it may just be semantics, you know, that we are to blame. I think there are things that we do, and I say we because, again, I'm a parent and I do this, even though I know not to do it. But we do have control. And I think the two main things that we can typically, or that parents can typically do better on, is one, validating our toddlers' emotions, and two, using our attention more strategically. So when a child is, let's say, freaking out about not getting another cookie or not being able to watch another show or having to brush their teeth, I think typically the beginning of that meltdown may be about the thing at hand. You know, I want another cookie because cookies are the most delicious thing. And then they can really quickly slide into, you don't understand how big a deal this is for me. I need to really make myself heard. And we do that as adults as well. I mean, the last time that you explained to your partner or your friend, you know, something that was going really badly for you, if they make light of it or just try to cheer you up without oh, that doesn't sound so bad, you'll say, oh, you don't think so? Well, let me tell you the same story again, and get louder, and your heart will start beating. And that's what we do when we don't feel like our emotions are being taken seriously. And so I think that's something that we frequently do as parents that can make tantrums worse, saying things like, come on, it's just a cookie. It's not the end of the world. Or, okay, I get it. You want another cookie, but let's not spend all day on that. You know, somehow belittling, not in any mean or intentional way, what our child is going through can, I think, make their protests a lot louder and more intense, because at that point it's about, yeah, no, you don't get it. So I'm going to keep upping the ante until you get how big a deal this is for me.
So I understand. I mean, we were talking about, you know, cookies and not getting the toy you want. And so I get that. But you also write about things that are really tough, difficult circumstances, of whether that be moving, whether that be divorce, going from one parent to another. There are also very serious things that there are strategies for managing tantrums under those very difficult conditions.
Absolutely. And with all those things, I say that, you know, I give those kind of brief treatment in the book, because I think it's very important to remember that at those times, tantrums are going to happen more, but there are other books and articles that dive into those more deeply. I think that, again, parents will say something like, oh, well, this, you know, the move clearly isn't affecting my child very much, or, you know, the fact that the nanny just disappeared overnight isn't really affecting my child. And then in the next breath, they'll say, but they've had so many more tantrums, or they're so much more stubborn. And so it's important for parents to recognize that the tantrum is how the child is potentially expressing that they are having a hard time. Your three-year-old isn't going to say, my new bedroom is really unfamiliar and I don't understand why we have to drive everywhere when we used to take the subway. Please help me work through this. They're going to pitch a fit that they have to go to bed. And so I think it's important to learn to interpret behavior that way. And then the rule of thumb that I talk about in the book is when in doubt about a specific strategy to use, although we can certainly talk about those too, you want to look at the levels of love in your home. And love is a shorthand for kind of connectedness and warmth and affection, and also the level of limits. And that encompasses structure and routines. And you want to make sure, particularly during really difficult transitions for families that those two things are both high, that you're spending connected time with your child, that you're really tuning into them, that you're putting your phone away sometimes, that you're enjoying the things they like to play with them, and also that you haven't abandoned all semblance of what day-to-day life looks like. Regular bedtime, regular eating times, expectations around what one does at meals, what one does in the morning when it's time to get ready to go to preschool. I think, though, as a general rule of thumb, going for those guidelines during difficult times is the place to start.
Let me jump onto the idea of the general rule of thumb. When do children typically, quote unquote, grow out of tantrums?
Are we going to move to talk about tantrums in adults, too? I mean, I think you had me listen to the news, by the way, right before.
Right, I know. Which is
not,
I know.
It's, I mean, before recording, it's not the way to get my nerves down right now. So I think, I mean, it's a very good question. Most of the time, tantrums are on their way out. Tantrums, the way we typically think of them, are on their way out fully by about 6 or 7. And they're starting to be out depending on the child by age 5. And I think it depends a lot, again, on and I'm talking about typically, you know, developmentally normal tantrums.
Right.
I'm not talking about exposure to trauma or, you know, that sort of thing. And it's when kids develop other ways of coping with their emotions, including language. And as that gets more advanced and as the parts of their brain that are responsible for example, impulse control and judgment and planning, as those areas of the brain get more mature and better able to communicate with each other, you start to see fewer tantrums because the other skills that one can use to channel emotions and express emotions become more advanced.
And doesn't school enter into it too? I mean, they become more socialized. They're around other kids. It's different.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. They're maturing. They're gaining different experiences. They're learning how to adjust their behavior depending on a setting. They're learning that, you know, if you're holding a ball in, you know, a quiet religious setting, you can't pitch it across the room. And if you're holding a ball at a picnic in a field, you can. All those types of things, which, again, are about the brain being able to categorize different things and different expectations. That's we don't always think about it, but that's a function of brain development, of executive functioning, which is the part of our brain that can do those types of advanced skills developing.
The name of the book is The Tantrum Survival Guide. Tune in to your toddler's mind and your own to calm the craziness and make family fun again. Rebecca, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you so much. It was a treat for me as well. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Rebecca Schrag's new book is The Tantrum Survival Guide. Tune in to your toddler's mind and your own to calm the craziness and make family fun again. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.